Blog Talk Radio.
We have devils in the courtroom. Devils in the courtroom. We have devils in the courtroom wearing black robes. Devils with the street papers, wild and alone. Some devils have a devil, they hit real hard. Some devils just there, punching 8 or 5 cards. While the probate court starts stealing your money.
You're tuning into Michigan Probate Radio, and this is the Blog Talk Radio channel, where hidden truths will be revealed about the Oakland County, Michigan probate court system with practical conversation. Michigan Probate Radio will show how Michiganders have been battling the corruption in the Oakland County probate court system through a public scrutiny platform since 2018. Our co-host and guest point of view are just that, their opinion. All audio and video clips are used for educational purposes only. My name is Valerie Kelly Bonner, also known as The Real Black Coffee, and the host of the Devil in the Courtroom series. I have the honor and the privilege of co-hosting this show with two wonderful women, Jody White, who is the producer of this show and a warrior for justice. She fights the injustice in the Oakland County probate court system daily. I also have with me Victoria McCasey. Victoria is not new to fighting injustice. She is true to fighting injustice. She is a motivational speaker, has been on several listening tours around the state to talk about the corruption within the Oakland County probate court system, and she is also a member of Stand Up Michigan. Ladies, let's begin our practical conversation.
Good evening, everyone. Today is February 16th. And tonight, we have a special guest. Valerie is not going to make it this evening, so we have a true friend of Michigan, Rick Black, joining us tonight. You are listening to Michigan Probate Radio on Hidden Truth Revealed channel. Welcome, Rick, with Victoria to Practical Conversation.
Thanks, Jody. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good evening, Rick and Jody. Victoria here.
Well, we have a very, very interesting show today. One of the things that Victoria and I have been doing through the help of the court watchers is we take the time to court watch the hearings that are going on in Oakland County. What that consists of is with the Zoom hearings right now, we are able to wake up at 8:30 in the morning. In Oakland County, the motion day is on Wednesday. We have 4 Oakland County probate judges, so you can go into any of their courtrooms through Zoom, and due to the canons in Michigan, you are able to view these courts for public scrutiny. Everybody does know that we've had some issues in Oakland County. Rick Black, I'd love for you to share with us how you met a few of us here in Michigan. And I hate to say it, but it was like 3 years ago that you and I have become friends. Rick Black met my husband, Jeff White, with another woman by the name of Mimi Braun. And Rick, kind of tell us how what happened when you came to Michigan.
Yeah, sure. My history with Michigan and probate frauds began in 2016. I, at the time, joined as a free volunteer director of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianship. It's an organization out of Southern Florida run by Dr. Sam Sugar. And I was working at the time to get a national coalition working together to expose probate frauds, primarily trust, adult guardianship, and probate frauds, those committed by predatory attorneys. And as part of coming on board with Sam, I agreed to do 100% of the intake. So my phone was ringing 7 days a week, hundreds and hundreds of calls. And I quickly noticed there's a problem in Michigan because we're getting an inordinate number of calls coming from Michigan. And I brought it to Sam's attention because it was odd to me. Most of your fraudulent, the hot spots around the country are associated with high density populations and wealth and seniors. And as I kept listening to the callers and talking about net worth, which has been my focus on this since we were first exposed to it in 2013, it became very clear why Michigan was an issue. One, there's massive net worth held by families there because of the success of the automotive industry, really since World War I. And those folks are aging out as we speak, and that wealth is being transferred to their heirs, most often their family members, and your laws and your court oversight, checks and balances, in Michigan leave a lot to be desired. So it creates a perfect opportunity for the predatory legal community to identify those of wealth, put them in a guardianship, intercept the funds, and go on to your next victim as you destroy this lovely individual who's earned this wealth and the family that they expected to protect them if and when they ever became vulnerable. So since 2017, we've known Michigan as a national hotspot because of those issues. I then went to Michigan for the first time, I think in late 17, and spent a day at the Oakland County Courthouse, reviewed several hearings, saw issues that alarmed me, spent some time in records, could see what information I could get access to, which was quite refreshing because I could see most of the records, similar to what we saw in Nevada when we started our work in 2013. And then I got to know your husband, and I got to know a number of other victims through that effort, and then had the wonderful opportunity to meet with the FBI in early 2018, the Department of Justice, Federal Department of Justice, but namely pushing for federal investigators to look into the activities there in Oakland County, but across the state. So that's, you know, it's been an amazing 5 years now. Sadly, we've made very little progress in Michigan. We were all hopeful with the election of Dana Nessel because most often to get anything addressed on these issues, the courts that sponsor them aren't going to do anything. They're going to continue to empower them, which means the vulnerable are going to continue to be exploited. These are criminal acts, fraud, embezzlement, extortion, exploitation, and the Attorney General is the highest law enforcement officer in every state, and they have an obligation and jurisdiction to investigate lawyers and guardians who use guardianship as a cover to exploit and steal from the vulnerable. And sadly, here we are 5 years later. We don't have any investigations to speak of. There's not been a single attorney criminally arrested or indicted. So it's very concerning that Michigan really wants to tackle this thing and protect its most vulnerable citizens.
Well, Victoria, what do you think? You know, we've been working with the Supreme Court justices. Can you tell us what you've been doing in the last year through meeting some of these Supreme Court justices?
Well, yes, we've met with, well, actually, we've met with Judge Justice Saharis, and we thought we had made some great points with him and a great communication, and he promised that he was going to look into it and investigate, and of course, I believe it fell on deaf ears because we've not heard back anything from them. Although COVID did kick in because we did have a meeting with them back in February of 2020, and they said they would meet again probably with us around August of 2020, and of course that didn't happen. But a lot of things have happened in between on their own. Apparently he has formed a committee that he's sitting on, and he's talking about making court more reasonable, more accessible for the common Joe off the street just to walk in and be able to navigate through the court without being lost, worried, or frightened. And he was also advocating for fees to be a lot lower and the forms to be easier to understand and be able to fill out on your own. So I find that interesting, especially with what we have planned this evening, because this past couple weeks that we've been in court, especially in Oakland County with Judge O'Brien, when we play these tapes, you're going to see or you're going to hear how these attorneys make it so difficult to have a fair day in court, and you'll see that the judge is absolutely running interference for these attorneys, the criminal attorneys, the co-conspirators, to continue to steal, rape, and pillage victims or wards. And it's kind of sad because the case that we're going to be listening to this evening is the ward has been gone now since, I don't know, a couple of years now, hasn't it been, 2019? And we're still in
the
court.
The mom died in 18 and the dad died in 19, yes. They died within a year of each other.
Yeah, so it's sad. It's really, truly sad. But I believe the young lady who is in court is not only fighting for the mom and the father and what was done to them. I think it's basically, and it's not really about the, I think she said it was jewelry and a little bit of cash. I truly believe it's about the principal. Because these guys are crooks. Absolutely crooks. And they need to be pulled out on the carpet.
We have the video from Justice Sahara that you were talking about. It's from December when they had a task force that they did. They did a report. Then they did a YouTube video. And so this is where the 4.5 minutes are coming from. And he's going to talk about some of the things that you just brought up. So let's listen to this for 4 minutes and 31 seconds. Here we go.
It's fair to say that justice for all is the process of making our civil justice system accessible and understandable to our neighbors, throughout our communities, and to the people in every corner of Michigan. As a trial judge many years ago in Wayne County, I was struck by how many people came to court without legal representation. These were typically people who were very nervous, people concerned about protecting their legal interests. Oftentimes, these people didn't even have an understanding of why they were in court. They were just told to be there. Although I did my very best to connect unrepresented litigants with legal service agencies or pro bono lawyers, to my great disappointment, more often than not, I was unable to help these unrepresented parties. All too often, legal aid agencies, which, by the way, do an amazing job, were overloaded with cases and were unable to take on any more. As a result, people who had done nothing wrong often lost their case because they didn't have the information or the help they needed to obtain the most advantageous result that may have been available to them at that time. The bottom line is that there are a variety of obstacles that block good, hardworking people in need of legal assistance from obtaining the help they need. Last year, 7 in 10 low-income households had a legal problem, and the vast majority of these people had little or no help in resolving those problems. We launched this task force with an aspirational but lofty goal, a goal everyone can embrace: 100% access to our civil justice system. The strategic plan and inventory report we released today represents the culmination of countless hours of work to inventory resources, identify gaps and barriers, and create a roadmap to enhance access to justice now and to forge a path for the future. A path that, over time, will transform our aspirational goal of 100% access to justice for all into a reality. Speaking on behalf of my colleagues on the Michigan Supreme Court, we're exceedingly grateful to the task force and its work groups and to hundreds of community stakeholders who came together and contributed to this comprehensive and vitally important project. Also, on behalf of Michigan Supreme Court, I extend our deepest gratitude and appreciation to the National Center for State Courts for providing our task force with the structure and funding necessary to complete this initial project in the best way possible. I urge everyone to read this report and to join us in implementing the steps we suggest Michigan take to get on the road to 100% access to justice for all. We start with 4 overarching principles. We will create a positive service-based culture, which is measured by whether people who access our civil justice system believe they were treated fairly and respectfully, regardless of outcome. Our civil justice system provides peaceful resolution of disputes. By its very nature, though, there will be a winner and a loser. Justice for All does not guarantee that everyone will be a winner. Justice for All is accessed at making sure those without legal representation are treated with dignity and respect and obtain the most advantageous result possible given the law and facts applicable to their case. We will simplify and streamline processes, rules, and laws so the civil justice system is easier to navigate, understand, and use. This is no small matter and will require a collaborative effort from the Michigan bench and bar, our legislative leaders, and the many stakeholders across Michigan.
My goodness. Oh, golly.
What do you think of that?
I just don't think this guy did his homework at all. I know he said he had said earlier that he had been researching and meeting with people to find out exactly what they needed to do for 18 months. Apparently, he forgot to stop in and sit and watch in these courts how these judges navigate their courtroom and how they cater to the co-conspirators, these handful of attorneys that are crooks. And no, nobody gets a fair day in court. That's absurd. If it would be a gift, that would be a win. If somebody could just go in on an even platform and have an opportunity to, you know, submit their evidence and be treated fairly with respect. What do you think about that, Rick?
I agree with you. For the most part, having looked into nearly 4,000 cases now over the last 5 years, the big thing that really mystifies me is the naivety of our judiciary. Look, there's a lot of them that are complicit. They know exactly what's going on, and they're committed to supporting their fellow members of the bar, their cronies, at the expense of the public. And they know that they can do it because there's almost no checks and balances in the equity court, probate in this case. But this is a third branch of the judiciary. It's It's the one that gets the least amount of resources. I enjoyed and chuckled as he made the comment about, we thank the National Center for State Courts and what they've done to help us in our effort. Well, I want to make sure that those funds, because I've worked with the NCSC now for 6 years, and they're a legitimate organization. They want courts to work with transparency and integrity. And they have offered programs to everyone in the nation. But what normally happens is states or counties that access them take the funds or the insights that are offered, and then they get applied to the criminal court or the civil courts, where all the money generally goes anyway. So this third branch, the equity court, which I derisively refer to as the family squabbles court, gets no oversight. And the attorneys like the dysfunction that's built into that system, because they're going to make a lot more money off the dysfunction than they ever would if it worked with integrity and transparency. And my frustration with Judge Zahra with his comments, he's been drinking the Kool-Aid from Milton Mack at the Administration of Courts to the Chief Judge, Kathleen Ryan, down in Oakland County, to the three probate judges who've heard cases for decades, and the dozens of attorneys who've benefited from that dysfunction. They all think these people walk on water, that they're like close to Jesus Christ himself. And the reality is they're not. They're not. Some of these folks are common thieves. They're liars. They understand the term litigation privilege, which is, for those listeners on the phone, they need to understand. When attorneys go into a courtroom, they almost never take an oath. That's intentional, because when they don't, they have every right to tell lies incessantly. Big lie tends to win. Big lie chorus almost always wins. So they leverage litigation privilege to destroy the innocent. And there isn't justice for all. It's greed for the takers, and it's punishment for the innocent. And until we get Judge Zahra and the whole administration, state administrative court office, educated on this issue, the atrocities are going to continue. And that's the importance of this show, is to let Michiganders know what's going on, know their risks, not only to themselves, but to their heirs, and that they've got to step up and take action, because the current public safety apparatus in Michigan is doing nothing, absolutely nothing, to protect them or to reform this system so that in the future it will protect them.
Amen.
Well,
Rick, why don't you really try to tell us how you really, truly feel?
Well, Rick, you were with us.
Go
well,
ahead,
Rick,
Joe,
you were there with us with Brian Zahra when in February when we met. You know, you are always there to get on the phone and help join us when we're speaking and trying to approach the issue with these judges. Maybe we are the naive ones. Maybe we are these 60 and 50 and 60 year old people that we believe that we could trust our court system. We believe that these judges and attorneys have been educated. So when we went to that meeting in February, we called you in. You were able to listen in. I gave Mr. Nevin, he's the communication director, Sam Sugar's book. Don Nevin, I have the book right here. It's The Guardian and the Elderly, The Perfect Crime by Dr. Sam Sugar. We gave that to them. They allegedly read it. You spoke for quite a long time with them. There were two attorneys in the room and about five other victims. And what we're just finding is the complacency that they look right at us. They act like they're listening to us. And now it's been a year later, and Michigan Probate Radio has started. We are on Facebook, so the videos that we're showing, you can also see them if you want to see some of the stuff in action. But it is very, very frustrating to be, in our case, the third and fourth year of doing this, and thinking we're going to get somewhere, because our tax dollars do pay for their expertise and for their rent and for the courtroom and for all those assistants that help in the courthouse. So I guess it's a little frustrating as a Michigander to see the amount of money that does go in. Victoria and I looked today. The probate court gets $3 million a year for the four judges and their staff. Mm. And another $3 million for the estate and with the mental health. So that's $6 million. That's a lot of money every year to hopefully get justice, but I don't think we are.
Yeah, that, look, there's plenty of money to afford justice for Michiganders. And my frustration is if these judges were more committed to protecting the vulnerable and the law, they would probably cut their workload in half. So we don't need bigger courthouses. We don't need more judges. We need to say no more often. Let's adopt the Nancy Reagan approach. Just say no. No, you don't need a guardianship. No, you don't need to take over the estate. No, your motion is denied. That doesn't happen enough. And sadly, on appeal, it also isn't overturned enough. So the entire system has an issue. But in defense of Justice Sahara, you know, I talked with him privately after that meeting. I talked several times with John Nevin, the PIO, public information officer, after that meeting. And John knew of the issues. He knew that Judge Zahara knew of the issues. But the struggle they're having, and I think it's a legitimate struggle, is how do we deal with it? How do we reform it? Because the judiciary doesn't have that obligation in our government. We have three branches, the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. And we're going to help them on the solution side, the reform side, to give them plausible options that can be implemented without completely confusing the entire system. So while I, a little bit to the defense of the justice, I also fault him because he took advantage of the pandemic like the rest of us did and really has done nothing throughout all of 2020. So we, you know, you've been on some of those calls. I'm on these calls every day. We got to get people up to Lansing en masse, demanding attention to this issue, presenting mountains of material evidence that refutes the false narrative, parroted narrative of the attorneys who continue to prevail and the big firms. You know, this is big business to the legal community in Michigan. It is a profit center. Adult guardianship is a profit center in that state, and the lawyers and attorneys are not going to give up without a fight. And that means, fortunately, we have right on our side. We have the law on our side. We have the evidence on our side. But we got to get it elevated to leaders who've been drinking the Kool-Aid being fed by the predators of the system.
Amen. I agree with that 100%. And, you know, I find, too, that they come up with a lot of ideas, but there are no consequences. Our next segment, we'll be talking about that as the justices have created an order, administrative order. Anyhow, we'll be right back after we take our...
You're tuning into Michigan Probate Radio, and this is the Blog Talk Radio channel, where hidden truths will be revealed about the Oakland County, Michigan probate court system. With practical conversation. Our co-host and guest point of view are just that, their opinion. All audio and video clips are used for educational purposes only.
Sorry about that, Vic. We had to get that station break in. Go ahead. I apologize.
Oh, That's okay. I didn't know if you could hear me, but I said we were going to take a break. Anyhow, the administration order that the justices came up with, I kind of had to laugh at it because gosh, they're sitting on a panel saying that they want to make going into the court for the common Joe a comfortable and enjoyable experience, but yet when we read this order, it's a joke because there are no consequences. They absolutely have contradicted everything they're talking about, and I'm tired of that. It seems wherever we go, they constantly snowball us or stonewall us every step of the way. So I think you're right, Rick, on that regard. We need to absolutely show up in droves at the court there in Lansing, Michigan, the Supreme Court, and definitely let them know that we're not going to accept this any longer. I know that they're talking about the cost of attorneys and that. We really need to have a cap on these attorney fees in probate court. I think that would really stop a lot of the nonsense. So.
Well, one of the things, Victoria, we've talked about this, you know, just in your case alone, you know, everybody knows Victoria, she's owned a tree farm. She lost her boyfriend, life partner of 35 years. The will went missing for a short period of time. The will came back. Everything is Victoria's, and yet when you look at the fight that she's had in Oakland County, the gentleman, Attorney Frazier, who has hired his own attorney, has cost your estate, what, $61,000 this year and then $31,000 last year. So you're fighting for your own money, and you have these attorneys taking $91,000. That's got to be mind-boggling to you.
It is. Because most people that hire attorneys don't expect to be taken to the cleaners. We're going there for help. And we're not asking them to make off of me what I would probably make in a year working, my life, you know, my salary for the year. So in one case, that's absurd. And I just don't understand how or what they're being or paying themselves for. Gosh, they're only attorneys. They're not a brain surgeon. So I know they want to be, but come on now. That's ridiculous. So I believe we need to have a cap. I think, for an example, let's say $1 million case or $1,000 case. As far as it goes for probate, it should be $1,500, and that's it. I don't think there's going to be too many attorneys that are going to be wanting to take cases, as well as, Rick, in the previous section that we were talking about, family must come first, always.
That's
the only time an attorney should ever be appointed is if they can't find anybody to help. So...
Yeah, the cap debate is a great one, but we've all got to understand, and particularly the listeners, that there is a duplicity, a stark duplicity, that is always part of a fraudulent guardianship and a reality in almost every case that comes before the court. And that speaks to the naivety of Justice Zara's comments. There's one set of rules for the predatory attorneys who are in front of these judges every day of the week, and then there's a very different set of rules for the families. And a family member who thinks, and your point was right on, Victoria, who thinks that the laws actually apply to them, and this is where you seek and receive justice, they're woefully uninformed because – this is a place of business for attorneys. This is how litigators, trial attorneys, make money. And you walking onto that field thinking you can compete with these people, it's like sending little leaguers onto the NFL field. They're going to get crushed. And it doesn't matter how hard that judge works to protect them. You don't send 75-pound kids against 300-pound men.
Right.
They get crushed. So you know, we got to do a lot more about how do we ensure these courts work with integrity and transparency when attorneys lie, commit fraud upon the court to gain access and control of an estate. They should be held accountable. That's perjury. Martha Stewart went to prison for perjury. Well, attorneys should go to court, go to prison. They should be criminally prosecuted, but they should be held accountable when they lie. And if just one judge in the state of Michigan would do that and file a bar complaint to make sure that lawyer is disbarred, things would change.
Exactly.
So let's just start there. The laws mean something to everyone. Justice is blind, and judges are the only backstop to hold attorneys accountable, and they're not doing it. So, you know, these atrocities are occurring because statutes and laws are being routinely ignored. If we add another one to the books that you're limited to only this amount of fees, they'll figure out some other reason to ignore that law and give the attorneys everything they want.
Well, you know, Rick, I think you're right on that. But I still think that these judges need to have their feet held to the fire because they know what these attorneys are doing. And for some unknown reason, they're putting their career on the line and going ahead, and they're paying out these attorneys with these excessive fees that they keep submitting to the court. So I truly hold the judges accountable. They are the ones that are allowing the stealing, raping, and pillaging. They encourage it. I watched Judge O'Brien last week take Mr. Schwartz's poor attorney and his client and put them in a box and then tell them, don't you dare step out of the box. But, Your Honor, I want to show you the truth, the evidence. And he said, well, if you do that, then I'm going to have to sanction you. Or better yet, you'll be in contempt of court. Now, to me, he's absolutely harboring these attorneys that are stealing, raping, and pillaging, and absolutely punishing the litigants for trying to come in and claim what's rightfully theirs or try to get their parent back, the ward. And then when you listen to these attorneys talk about how they pad the bill, it's unbelievable to think that an attorney who is a guardian over a ward puts on his, well, he goes into the phone booth and puts on his attorney suit so he can go buy a box of diapers and charge the ward $245? Really? Gee, it doesn't take much common sense to understand that they're running the meter. They're stealing.
That's right.
And shame on them. And the judge sits there in all his glory, and he applauds them, and then he puts the litigant down, shame on you, and let me punish you for trying to submit the truth and have me do the right thing. So I'm going to say we need to really call these judges out on the carpet, but right now there are no consequences for the judges. So we need to make sure that we can find a way to put them in a box, impeach them, and get rid of them. And I don't want to see them get rewarded for their bad behavior and their dysfunction. I would like to see them go without their retirement. No rewards for them. No. Shame on you. Shame, because we all know their names.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Well, I have
one of the things. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Rick.
No, go ahead, Rick. Go ahead.
Now, you know, one of the things that Sear and several of our allies nationwide are pressing each state capital and Washington, D.C., is one, to ensure that state courts have accountability. And it's a simple step, but it's been monumental to try to get it to become law. And that is that the administration of courts has to every year give the public a census on how many open adult guardianships they have, how many were created, how many were dismissed, or the ward died and have been dismissed as a result, and what are the total assets that have been acquired through the act, including trust assets, which is a unique fraud that's committed by most predatory guardians and their attorneys. No state has adopted that, and the federal government, we had it passed through two committees. It never got out of committee and onto the floor of either the House or Senate, but we're now trying to get it relaunched in the new administration to hopefully bring it forward and make it a federal law that forces these to at least measure what we know is important, what is the census of those under adult guardianship, and what are the total assets acquired by that initial order for guardianship or conservatorship by these judges. The other reform that we're pushing hard on is to have at the state level a appeals process for contested guardianships that goes to a jury of your peers that is managed by a single court that looks at the case de novo. That's a fancy Latin term for as new. Go back to the very beginning and let's look at all the evidence, the material, the estate documents, the testimony, and let a jury of 12 of our peers make the decision on whether that judge made the right call a year, a month, 10 years earlier when their intention might not have been the most genuine. And through that process, have feedback to the county judges who made that original ruling so that they are given remedial training and told very clearly, hey, you messed up on this one. The jury saw it very differently, and we're going to watch you because you do have an obligation to follow the law just like every other Michigander. Those two reforms would make a big change in Michigan. And hopefully over the next decade, we'll have some success in getting both of them put in place. We'll see.
Well, you know, Rick, I've been going on to the judicial website. We have a one state court website. And I do appreciate the information that they're putting out there. One of the things that they did say is that the state court administrator, they do not license the attorneys. They do not handle grievances against attorneys. They do not remove judges from office. The voter can, but here's the problem. They would have to give us options. When you only allow one man or one woman to sit as a probate candidate, it doesn't give us a whole lot of options to vote them out. SACO also does not conduct criminal investigations. So what they do is exactly what you just said. They collect the data, and I love this part. They collected to see how long it takes the court to resolve the cases. Now, Victoria's case is from 2016, and my husband's has been in since 2012. So that might be why the justices and the attorney general probably know the White family and the McCasey family through Conrad Rader pretty well, because our cases are not being resolved quickly. And one of the things that they're saying is that they're charged, this is SACO, the State Court Administrative Office, to help Michigan trial courts, ready, operate effectively so that they can serve the public. And that is where I believe that this isn't really rocket scientists. I have never met so many arrogant people in my life, being harmed by them physically and financially. It has not gotten to me mentally. I'm thankful for Luann and her Face Us group and your SEER group and all the other groups that have been around to make sure we're not going crazy. Because when you've been in the system for as long as many of us have been, we are looking for answers, and we are going to continue to battle, I guess, with our elected and our appointees, and we're going to demand an operation that's effective to take care of our needs. So that's something I'd like to put out into the airwaves. I am hoping that people like Ed Hutton, who is our probate administrator in Oakland County, he's part of the $6 million that it costs us each year to service us. There's quite a few court clerks, quite a few court judiciary people that help our judges. We're going to be playing a clip after the next break, and you're going to see how disorganized these courts are when they're in the process of being adjudicated. And I don't know, it's the kind of money that they're putting out. I believe that there should be a little bit more maybe preparation before you go to court. They do go to court every Wednesday for their motion day. And Judge O'Brien made a comment that they do 70 cases on motion day. Well, no, actually, they don't do 70 motion. They say that they do, but the majority of them are being adjourned because of COVID. And people like Victoria, she knows that feeling because she has yet to get her day in court, and it's been almost a year for her. So I know I threw a lot in the kettle because it's just crazy the amount of frustration a lot of us citizens do have when in our line of work as a real estate agent or an engineer, you have rules to follow, and you follow them. And if you don't, you would think there'd be a consequence. So that's my 2 cents for the day.
Thanks, Jody. Well, the one thing we do understand is courts aren't a profit center. Most business people work in a profit and loss environment where there's checks and balances throughout the system, the employees, the owners, the stockholders, the customers, and profits. And if you don't manage all four of those avenues, you will fail as a business leader. In a court proceeding, there are no consequences. They can get it wrong, particularly in equity court. They can get it wrong every day from a standpoint of what the law says and what the evidence dictated. And there's really no consequences. They'll be guaranteed a job. They'll be guaranteed a pension. Their friends will be happy, fellow members of the bar. And until, you know, again, back to the benefits of this radio show, until Michiganders form a coalition and start demanding leadership to do their jobs, these atrocities are going to grow.
Boy, I agree with you there as well, Rick, because what you were saying earlier about these judges, they wanting to adjudicate these cases, and there are no consequences for them giving all of our assets away. I think, and I don't know where I came up with this idea, but why are they protected? I know that the Attorney General said that she was thinking about changing that for the Michiganders, that judges would have when they leave the bench.
Immunity.
That's it. Thank you. Immunity for 6 years after, but I don't know why they have immunity. If they're going to sit up on the bench and take responsibility and make life decisions about people's lives and their assets, they should be held accountable. And if they were living up to their oath and following the canons, what is the problem? And they do have bonds. They are all bonded. So if they do make a mistake, because we're not perfect, they're bonded, so that should cover it. So I don't understand why they need the immunity.
Well,
what do you think?
Immunity's been guaranteed to every judicial officer at every level in the country, and I think there's good reasons for that. To get a recall done on a judge, or in Michigan, to get them voted out of office, is a nearly an impossible task, because how many times do you go to the polls and see a judge contested for their position? Almost never. And the reason that occurs is because the county and state bar positions attorneys for judicial positions. So this whole apparatus is very much controlled by the Michigan State Bar. And by design, there's not, you know, we're not going to vet judges. We're not going to, you know, a politician who says stupid things or votes a stupid way, there's 100 scorecards that anyone can access with public information to make a judgment. Does this person see the world the way I want them to see it and therefore earn my vote? When you come to judges, there is no scorecard. All you're banking
right.
on is that the Bar Association, who put them in that position, actually vetted them. And these are people that understand right and wrong. Number one, they have a moral compass. And number
you
two,
think.
They're that's right. That's right. And number two, they know how to execute the law to protect justice, liberty, right and wrong. Those two things. Now, when we look at Judge Daniel O'Brien in Oakland County Court, and I've had the privilege of seeing him live a couple of times. I've seen him on Zoom more times.
Yeah.
He's got some problems, but the bar loves him. And the reason they love him is because he gives them what they want. And sadly, in an equity court, the most predatory members of the bar, like Joe Ehrlich, like Thomas Frazier, like John Munger, like John Young, like
Jennifer Carney.
I can go on and on and on because I've studied the records in Oakland County and I've studied the records in other counties too in Michigan. Look, when these people walk in that courtroom, they expect to win every time. And they know how to leverage litigation privilege to ensure that they win. Daniel O'Brien is unwilling to control that and police it and punish accordingly. Well, then the atrocities only grow.
Well, and during the hearings on Wednesday last week, Rick, they Judge O'Brien, whenever a litigant happened two times, mentioned one of these nefarious ones, Judge O'Brien shuts them down, tells them to stop talking, and then you can just see the frustration in the litigants. And so we as court watchers, we are trying to get a hold of those families because we would like to get their side of the story. And it's very, very unique to see how quickly Judge O'Brien will not allow litigants to speak against their, we call them the insiders.
That's right.
And not only that, I watched Judge O'Brien absolutely protect the attorneys, and he was angry that a litigant had enough balls to get up out of the probate court and go into another court because she found that Judge O'Brien or the other judge was incompetent, and he was really insulted to think that she had enough nerve to do that, and he was really peeved off that the other judge agreed with her and disagreed with him, and I believe it was with Judge Hallmark as well. But you know what I found really funny is that Judge O'Brien is a mind reader, and he can read other people's thoughts, including the litigant and the other judge, Hallmark. Yet he couldn't speak plainly to another attorney who was representing Ehrlich and Frazier to get the order straight. Of course, he said he thought he meant what he was saying, but he knew he was wrong. I mean, he's just a jerk and a jackass. So...
Well,
that's my take.
We do have that video. We do have that video, and I do want to explain who this Michael Swartz is. You're going to hear him talk, and he's very slow and meticulous. He has been practicing for 47 years. And in this affidavit that we have, he served as a deputy chief counsel to the Committee on Grievances for the Bar Association of New York, and he was also the grievance administrator of the Michigan Attorney Grievance Commission. He was an adjunct professor of law at the University of Detroit School of Law, and he taught classes in ethics, legal ethics, and professional responsibility. And he served in the same capacity at Wayne State University School of Law. He also co-authored some information for Michigan on legal ethics regarding the Michigan Rules of Professional Conduct and Disciplinarian Procedures, as he wrote numerous law journals and articles on the subject of legal ethics and professional responsibility. And the reason why I'm telling you all this is as we play this next clip, this was again last week when there was about eight of us court watchers listening. Judge O'Brien was sitting there hearing the case. We've talked about Joe Ehrlich. Joe Ehrlich is the attorney in Victoria's case where he got paid $91,000 to work for Frazier. Well, this is another case where he's working for another litigant. We call her another VIP. And you'll hear his attorney fees are $133,000. So we're going to real quickly listen to this clip. We're going to go to a commercial break, and then we're going to hear back from Rick Black and Victoria McCasey. We miss you, Valerie, but we are glad that you are here listening to Michigan Probate Radio.
The only people who should have their microphones turned on are Mr. Schwartz and Mr. Ehrlich. Everyone else, and particularly the persons who are in the courtroom but are not part of this case.
Apologies to Mr. Schwartz, but he's got to get his facts straight before he argues to the court.
Well, it's interesting that Mr. Ehrlich should say that, because when you take a look at the actual file number, it's 2016-373-277-CA. That is not a case in which Mr. Ehrlich has entered any kind of appearance, to the best of my knowledge. I understood that he had a DA. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe it's that he didn't have the DA for Janet Kapp. So,
that is correct, Your Honor. I do not have an appearance in the Janet Kapp DA.
Right, so I take back what I just said, because I knew that he didn't have it in one case, and now when I look at it, I realize.
Mr. Schwartz, why are we talking about the decedent's estate?
Because I just wanted to indicate that when I talked about the CA case, I made a mistake, and I wanted to correct that mistake on the record. That's why we're talking about that, and for only that reason.
Okay, how does that help the issue of whether there's a jury with regard to fees?
Well, I wasn't really at that point, Your Honor. I was just trying to correct something that I said. That's all, Your Honor. I believe in August of 2020, a jury demand regarding Mr. Ehrlich with regard to his seeking something in excess of $130,000. That was filed, I believe, on August 21st of 2020. I don't believe that's been adjudicated.
Okay. I do see that somewhere. Look, that's wrong. Yep. August 24th. Okay. Mr. Schwartz, anything else?
Yeah, I'd just like to know whether or not we can have that demand adjudicated, because I think that's important.
I don't know. I don't understand you sometimes, Mr. Schwartz. You need to speak clearly.
I'm sorry.
What did you just say?
I said, Your Honor, that there was a jury demand as to Mr. Ehrlich. He's got something pending, I believe, in which he's seeking something in the order of $133,000. And I believe, Your Honor, that on August 21st of last year, a jury demand was filed regarding that. And I also believe that up until the present time.
Mr. Schwartz, I believe that. I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day or something. I just said, I can see it. And then I said, is there anything else? Which normally means, is there something other than what we were just talking about?
No.
Can you please?
I'm just.
No.
No, I just said, you know, there needs to be an adjudication. That's the only thing. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, so no more issues, right?
That is correct.
With respect to the other witness is a mere employee of the bank. The bank is already on notice that Mr. Schwartz and Ms. Busta cannot issue subpoenas relating to records. So instead of going to the keeper of the records of Independent Bank, they went to someone who is simply an employee of one of the branches who cannot testify as to the authenticity of the records. In addition, Judge, if you look at the attachment to the subpoena, it is, in my humble estimation, just another effort to harass. The subpoena issued to Independent Bank asks for records from March 1st, 2017 to present on 4 accounts, none of which are relevant to the instant case, and certainly nothing for March 1st is. Obviously, this subpoena, it was only sent forth to harass. She couldn't have testified as to the records anyway because she's not the custodian. So we don't believe that even if Mr. Schwartz had had the opportunity, we filed an objection and a motion to quash these originally for the reasons I've just stated on the record. They are simply overreaching documentation that has absolutely nothing to do with anything other than to punish the bank and Mr. Frazier. They asked for accounts all the way back to Ms. Andrucci when she was acting as the fiduciary, and accounts that were only with respect to Ms. Andrucci, having absolutely nothing to do with this account, which begins in 2017.
You are listening to Michigan Probate Radio. We will be right back to talk about harassment and squashing.
You're tuning into Michigan Probate Radio, and this is the Blog Talk Radio channel, where hidden truths will be revealed about the Oakland County, Michigan probate court system with practical conversation. Our co-host and guest point of view are just that, their opinion. All audio and video clips are used for educational purposes only.
Wow.
What do you think, Victoria?
I tell you, when I listen to Ehrlich, he makes my stomach turn. You know, he is talking about harassment. Really, he's talking about squashing the truth. We're truth seekers. Nobody's going to waste their time or efforts to go to the bank and get copies of records to submit to the court that would have nothing to do with the case. And I believe that there were quite a bit of evidence that they had suppressed from coming in because, again, Judge O'Brien was protecting Frazier and Ehrlich. It's really ridiculous what goes on there. And when you sit there and you watch and you think about you're paying your tax dollars to let Mr. O'Brien sit up on that bench to harm the public, it makes you damn mad. It makes me real mad to think, and this goes on and on day in, day out over at Oakland County at the 1200 building. That's why I think we really need to get Dave Coulter involved and also the mayor of Pontiac, because we need to get them to sit in these court cases and listen to what's going on. As we played last week, I think it was a part from Mr. Coulter saying that, yes, the attorney general did tell him that the raping, pillaging, stealing, and murdering was going on and that he knew it was very, very, very serious. Well, Dave, that's been almost a year ago. So we need to bring him back in and, like I said, get the mayor involved of Pontiac, because the courthouse is in the city of Pontiac, and people that are in Oakland County should be protected. Really, the residents that are paying the taxes there need to know what's going on underneath their noses in their backyard. And if they knew, definitely they would not be happy with the probate court of Oakland County. I think they would be rather upset to find out that they're paying money to be harmed. And trust me, if it's not them today, it will be them in the future, because this has been going on for a long time in Oakland County. And I think, like Rick said, it's not going to stop. It's not looking any better. And we really need to educate the public, because everything's a secret right now. And they're damn mad that we have court watchers. They're mad that we're putting our noses in their business. Really, it's our business, because the courthouse is the people's courthouse. And our taxpayers make it possible for Judge O'Brien to have a job, and for Ehrlich and Frazier to be officers of the court. And I'm embarrassed to think that that's what we employ over there. So that's my take.
Yeah, I'd just like to, for the listeners, they need to understand, these are their neighbors. These are citizens. These are Michiganders who spent their lives being clean of breaking the law, of raising families, who executed their estate documents and had everything prepared so that if they became incapacitated or ill or died, that their estates, that there would be documents that direct that their estates would be protected for their heirs. It was interesting listening to Judge O'Brien, because I know that case. Mylon Kapp, four daughters, had his estate documents in order. There was no reason for he and his wife to be in a guardianship. There was no reason for he and his wife to have to go through probate. Yet they lost most of their estate and their lives because of the interference of probate. I'll name three other cases, all under Judge Daniel O'Brien, who, if you've ever been in his courtroom, his face is red, his nose is bulbous. That usually indicates maybe a potential alcoholism problem, but in my opinion, he generally has dandruff on his black robe. It's easily seen, so maybe even some hygiene issues. But guy makes nearly $200,000 a year, and he will get a pension that will exceed the salaries of most Americans by a factor of two until the day he dies. So he is being extremely well paid to protect Michiganders. Yet, in the case of John White, in the case of Gene Wahab, in the case of Conrad Rader, in the case of Mylon Kapp, he chose, all of which who had children, begging or significant others, begging and directed through their estate documents to protect their estate upon death from interlopers and interceptors like probate litigators can be. Judge Daniel Bryan ignored all of those estate documents to ensure that his cronies in the bar were rewarded. These are your neighbors. These are Michiganders. These are people who were educated, built families, built estates, and prepared for their death. And those preparations were ignored by judges who are called to protect them.
Mm-hmm. You're right, Rick.
Oh,
you're
exactly.
Absolutely right.
Exactly. And one thing, too, that I guess the name-calling, the fact that Ehrlich can say that the litigants are harassing the court system is kind of mind-boggling. Rick, I think you recall the Brad Geller case where Brad Geller had gone to court at the upper-level courts. You can probably explain it better. But the Teresa Escalus, she is the attorney who's protecting Ehrlich, who's protecting Munger and Frazier. And she also said that there's harassing going on and sanctions should be charged. Well, one thing I don't know if you know, Rick, but we got an email from this family saying that now that you've been sanctioned, we want you to sign a settlement to dismiss your claims to go to the appeal. So they're doing everything in their power to name call, manipulate, deceive, and just be so unprofessional. And there's not one person today that will take our complaint. You know, we are trying to go to a couple people, but I'd like your opinion on what you feel about Michiganders being called harassers when we just want our courthouse back.
Yeah, we initiated a phrase a number of years ago now that applies to all these cases. Isolate the victim, defame legitimate protectors, and liquidate the estate. Joe Ehrlich and dozens of other attorneys who operate in Oakland County know that modus operandi very well. They're going to lie about the legitimate protectors. They're going to hide estate documents, suppress evidence to make sure that the judge really doesn't know. And again, I feel for most of the judges. I have a very different opinion of Judge Daniel O'Brien, but I feel for most judges because in the face of a liar's chorus of fellow members of the bar, it's nearly impossible for them to discern what's true, what's not true, and how should I rule. But that said, the MO that you described, Jody, is typical. They're going to attack. They're going to intimidate. They're going to lie about the family members or anyone else who attempts to uphold the estate documents and the law because they have to discredit those that could discredit them. And I was intrigued with the debate with Mr. Schwartz because he has every right to those bank statements. Those bank statements are the proof as to what frauds occurred. And Daniel O'Brien knows that. And that's why he's going to aggressively fight to make sure those documents, though that material evidence, never comes forward. Because then the gig is up. Then everybody knows, oh, gee, they had separate books. The bank statements say a very different thing from the accountings that you may have submitted to the court, because most often those accountings are never submitted because they know Judge O'Brien will protect us, so we just hide the evidence. It's a great way to create a crime, and lawyers know it better than anyone.
Wow. That makes me really upset to hear that. Totally.
Well, Victoria, with the amount of money you're facing,
that's right. It should upset every Michigander. The four cases that I highlighted, all under Judge Daniel O'Brien. You know, you have, I think, what, 67 counties in Michigan? Do you know what the number is?
83 counties.
83.
Okay, 83. Thanks for the correction. And you probably have 250 judges, all making roughly $200,000 a year, that are paid by your tax dollars to protect you. And just these four cases, over $3 million of familial wealth was handed to attorneys and their cronies who sponsored a fraudulent guardianship in all four cases. This gets very, very lucrative to the legal community very, very quickly and has been for decades in Michigan. And the public needs to understand, you are at risk.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm still at the point where we're being called that we are harassing. The fact that they're using an action plan when they're the ones that are supposed to be professional, unbiased, working for us, and yet Judge O'Brien has no problems calling us court watchers out, calling me out specifically sometimes, and just to see the amount of money that Joe Ehrlich has taken from Jane, because she's another one, Myla and Victoria and Jeff, we figure it's almost over $500,000 in attorney fees to protect Frazier under these probate judges. And, you know, where is Ruth Johnson? Where is Jim Rundstedt? Where are our senators in the Judiciary Committee who – there was a Judiciary Committee in 2018 that a lot of these people went to in that cycle. Now we're in this cycle, and we've been going to those committee meetings, to the Judiciary Committee, the oversight, the House reps, and we just can't seem to get anybody to court watch. And we also go to the commissioner. So we are hoping with this Michigan Probate Radio we're able to expose some of the things that we see. We cannot court watch all four. We cannot court watch all the time. We are looking always for people that would like to court watch. We did get a couple new people today you're able to call contact us at MichiganProbateServices@gmail.com if you're interested in learning how to court watch. I highly recommend, like I'm asking my senators, my House reps, and my commissioners to do, I want you to come. You have to come as far as Rick Black. Rick came from a couple states over to court watch for us. And he started his company to reform. We would like to start with our own people that are in the elected position to come and help the litigant. Please. So that's my plea as we're on the air of Michigan Probate Radio.
Oh. Yeah, I would reinforce it. I think in every one of the 83 counties in the state, and not every county has reported fraudulent cases to SEER, but several, and I can name them if you want, have registered multiple county or multiple cases. Muskegon, Washtenaw, Macomb, Wayne, Oakland. I can't remember the counties, but Charlevoix
Kent,
thanks. Oh, geez, yeah, Grand Rapids. Lots of problems over there. Which brings up a different point, because there's two primary modes of fraud that occur within a fraudulent guardianship. We tend to focus on estate trafficking, because that's indeed, this is what these attorneys do. Some people traffic drugs or guns or other paraphernalia. In this case, they're acquiring an estate for free, pennies on the dollar, and then they're distributing it to their friends. And it's although we'd love to call it human trafficking, it doesn't quite fit the legal description of human trafficking, because all they're really after is the estate, and it's rather easy to acquire through a fraudulent guardianship. But in these cases, estate trafficking is the biggest beneficiary. All the attorneys, all their downstream networks benefit from a fraudulent guardian. The other issue that we see routinely in Michigan is Medicaid, Medicare fraud, because once a person, particularly someone with dementia, who's pretty self-sufficient, they go to the bathroom, they shower and shave, they feed themselves, they really require no attention at all, and you can put them in a group home where your incremental cost might be $1,000 a month, and your federal entitlements through Medicaid can exceed $15,000 a month.
Wow.
So the attorneys who help the Department of Social Services, whatever that organization is in Michigan, to attract victims, put them in a fraudulent guardianship, remove them from their family, the money that can be made from the federal entitlements is almost as much as what an estate is. You just come about the funds in a little different way. And we have not seen investigations of guardians and attorneys who routinely place vulnerable adults, destitute vulnerable adults, involuntarily into guardianships for the Medicaid entitlement. So the taxpayers are getting ripped off either way. Michiganders who pay taxes are getting ripped off either way. Either their estates are being stolen or their tax dollars are being wasted on people that have loved ones that want to care for them and are not allowed to, because the state's decided that money's worth more to us and our crony attorneys than to you.
Well, you know, Rick, I'm going to go back and go back to the judges, because Judge Callahan is married to an FBI agent, and I think that's part of the problem with us going to the Detroit FBI, as he works there, and so I'm thinking that they're well insulated. But I want to tell you what happened, which was really interesting. I have been trying to get my will admitted for almost a year now. It'll be on the 25th of March coming up. And back in October, the judge's staff attorney, Christine Wade, decided that she was going to hijack my case. And so I had asked to have the will admitted, and they put it off because of the coronavirus, and finally got a hearing in August. And, of course, they canceled that because they didn't send or put the Zoom directions in. And from that point on, they have refused to give me a date. So I've been petitioning the court every 21 days to get someone to give me a date. Well, they finally set me a date, I thought, and I was so excited about it. And it turned out that it was on Saturday. So they purposely sabotaged me to have that date. So I filed another petition. And, of course, Christine Wade, I had spoken to her on the phone and talked to her about filing the petition. And she was trying to tell me that I needed to go back and clear up the dates of the accounting. Frazier and Ehrlich wanted to file an accounting back in September and have that heard. And, of course, they never sent me out any notice, so we couldn't go forward with that. But she also wanted me to address the fact that the hearing of August 27th was canceled due to the Zoom directions. And I told her, that's already come and gone. I'm not going to address that. Anyhow, so I went ahead and sent a petition in, and the very strange thing was, is after we had that conversation, she decided to run a pen through what I had requested, totally changed the order, wrote in what she thought was to happen, which happened on November 30th, and she and the judge got together, and the judge signed the order that Christine Wade had requested. So now it's not my hearing any longer. It's between the judge and Christine Wade. So when I contacted an attorney, he wasn't willing to take the case, but he told me, whatever you do, whatever you got to do, don't talk too much and don't go forward with that hearing because their goal is to push the accounting through. Now, that judge needs to be removed off the bench, and the attorney, Christine Wade, needs to have her attorney license removed, because what she did was totally illegal. And that judge sat there on the 30th, and she went through and said, yep, there was a line run through that, blah, blah, blah. But she didn't tell you the whole truth. She didn't tell you or anybody who was listening on Zoom that they had hijacked that. So right now I'm looking for an attorney, and it's quite hard to find one because if they're not drinking the Kool-Aid and part of the boys' club, they don't want to go into court. So
that's right.
I just find it very interesting how corrupt the judges really are. And the beautiful thing about it is that the attorney general told me back in September of 2018 or 2019, that if you don't like who's on the bench or if you don't like the attorney general, then vote them out. Well, guess what? Judge Ryan and Judge Callahan are coming up to be reelected to be put back on the bench. And I promise you that we're going to do as much as we can to make sure that they are not to go back on the bench, because we need new blood in our court system. And if we have to march up and down Woodward Avenue every day of the week until election day to let everybody know and to wake them up, that's what we're going to do, because we can't have this anymore. It's getting worse and worse by the moment. And Mr. Coulter, if you're listening, you're right. It's very, very serious, and people are absolutely being murdered by these people, and we need to do something immediately. I'm tired of hearing the promises. If it was his mother or father that were on the ropes, I think he'd move a little quicker. So that's my take on it.
Yeah, this is
a national
issue.
Well, Rick, we're at the last couple minutes. Yep. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. This is a national issue. It's going to require us as citizens to step up and be heard. The law is on our side. The material evidence is on our side.
Yep.
But the system has failed us. And
it's
when
broken.
You look at the march on Lansing last year, the January 6th
yes.
escapade in Washington, D.C.,
yep.
there are a lot of Americans that are frustrated. I don't approve of storming the Capitol, but I do understand why many who are law-abiding, tax-paying citizens feel that our government has let them down. And many of their complaints are with the judiciary. Yes, with law enforcement, but the buck starts at the top. And your governor, your attorney general, your judges are not protecting you as well as they could. And they don't intend to self-correct. So it is incumbent that if you listen to tonight's show and you know of friends, relatives that have been affected by atrocities in the probate court system, please support Jody, Victoria, and the rest of the team that's trying to elevate these issues in Lansing and get law enforcement and the legislative and executive branches to do their jobs and protect Michiganders. It's going to require an army of activists who are courageous enough to elevate the facts. And you've got a team that's starting up there. And I just want to wish you guys, girls, the greatest of success, because God knows you deserve it.
Gee, thank you,
well,
Rick.
Thank you so much. And we appreciate you coming on the show. We are live at Michigan Probate Radio. We have Greg Atkins. He's one of our faithful listeners. He's telling us every day, 24/7 cameras would totally stop the nonsense. So, Greg, thank you again for posting that for us to remind everyone. We would love to have 24/7 court cameras running in all of our judiciary, and then they would know that they are always being watched. We are going to go ahead and close off the show tonight. It is
Well, wait a minute, Jody, before you do that, I wanted to tell the audience that on February 2nd, 2021, I made an error on Richard Howard Bernstein in saying that I thought he had gone to Cooley Law School as well as Wayne State. And that's not true, so I want to set it straight for the record. He went to the University of Michigan Northwest University of Law School. So kudos to you for getting through that. It was a task being blind. But it would be great to see him sit up on the Supreme Court and turn this around. Even though he can't see, it'd be great for him to open the doors for the rest of us to be able to see that justice will be done.
Exactly. Well, Rick Black, thank you so much for filling in for Valerie tonight. You will definitely hear Valerie next week. We are going to continue to be the public scrutiny. Thank you for listening to Michigan Probate Radio, and have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Michigan Probate Radio on the Blog Talk Radio's Hidden Truth Revealed channel. We provide a keen awareness of the corruption and misconduct found in the business model of probate court, which is designed to shut you up or shut you down. Follow us on Facebook at Michigan Probate Radio. Email us at MichiganProbateServices@gmail.com. We will leave you with our theme song, Devils in the Courtroom, produced and written by Run of the Mill Music Group. So long. Thank you.
ties better